Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I welcome you to Lunatic Mondays on CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. Tonight, I have a guest who I'm very happy to have. We have found that we have a lot in common, and we have grown to be very good friends. So his name is Dave Gaddy. He's a Southern male witch whose journey through the realms of magic and spirituality has captivated hearts, hailing from North Carolina and currently living in Atlanta. Gaddy blends his ancestral roots with the ancient craft, infusing his practice with a unique Southern charm. With a deep connection to nature, he navigates the realms of folklore, spell work, and passion for ancestral magic, sharing his insights in a way that resonates with the soul. Join Gaddy on an adventure as he weaves the tales of his experiences, revealing the wisdom of a Southern male witch walking a path that follows dusty roads, mountain wisdom, and a heart full of humor and passion. Of course, I'm reading from his book, The Simple Magic of Wild Things, The Journey of a Southern Male Witch. Dave, welcome to Lunatic Mondays. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. I've been so excited about this. You know, I love you to pieces.
I love you too. And I'm going to say this just so I get it out of my system, because my ego, you stroke my ego in all the right places. For a long time, you know, being a pagan and being so involved in the pagan community, I always wonder what it feels like when somebody mentioned you in a book or dedicated a book to you. And then I get the copy of this book to prepare for this interview, and lo and behold, there's my name on the dedication. And I'm like, what? I was at the doctor's office when I read what that, and I say, what, out loud, and everybody looked at me, and I was like, don't mind me, you know, it's a good one. Such an honor to be immortalized on your book, but also such an honor that we get to see each other. And I have come to find out, for I think very logical reasons, that culturally I resonate a lot with people from the South of the United States, and particularly with folks that have a relationship with the Appalachian region, right? That has all this folksy culture, folk magic, etc. Byron Ballard, oh my God, I forgot his name. Weston, and of course you. So it's such an honor to have you. For those folks who don't know you yet, tell us a little bit about how you became a witch. How did you know you were a witch?
Oh my gosh, I think I've always known it. It's one of those things that you know in your knower when it comes up and when it happens. I mean, it's just like, even as a child, I was talking to the animals on the farm when everybody was like, yeah, you shouldn't be doing that. People think you're crazy. I was always that child that would try anything one time. And I think you found that out in the book a little bit. I was a little mischievous. And I think that as witches, we all have that born into us. I mean, I think that mischief and magic kind of go hand in hand a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I actually just kind of started my practice just being in nature. I mean, as a kid, I would disappear into the woods behind the house or back to the pond, back behind the house, and just sit with the animals. I mean, it wasn't unusual for my dad to see me crossing the yard with a line of animals behind me. But I mean, we're talking dogs, chickens, ducks, geese, you name it. They were behind me just following me to wherever I was going.
They see you
And
as one of their own.
exactly. I mean, they were just like, yeah, he looks like he's going to go have fun. Let's go with him. And then as I got older, I started just digging for anything that I could find. And in those days, back when I was a kid, we'll say in the 70s and 80s, the books weren't as available back then. It was hard to find material on witchcraft. So it was kind of like you dug into history. And I've always been just a huge history buff. So the witch trials, whether here or in Europe, interested me. I wanted to know about these granny women in the Appalachians. I wanted to know, and of course, my grandma fueled that fire too. I mean, with her, a lot of folklorists and a lot of Appalachian witches incorporate Christianity or not necessarily Christianity, but the Bible into their practice. And it was no different with my grandma. I mean, my grandma'd stand outside and whistle up the wind, but then again, she kept that big old huge Bible that all Southern families have set on her end table. And then, like I said in the book, you go to pick it up, and if it wobbled any, she'd come after you with her hands under it and say, "Don't drop that. Don't spill it. Let the blessing spill out." And it was kind of that was a revelation for me, and I talk about that in the book, that we have to handle people the same way. We have to handle people tenderly, gently, because you never know what they're dealing with, and the blessings might fall out.
Absolutely.
So that's been a big part of my practice. And to be honest, I fully feel like I came into who I was as a witch when I was working in the church. People don't think about it, but the church teaches a lot of the principles that we use in witchcraft, especially the Pentecostal churches. And I was involved in the Assemblies of God, and I learned how to stir energy up. I learned how to meditate in the church. I'm not going to say that I was one that believed in the big old man up in the sky, but I worshiped the way I worshiped. And most of the time that was in nature. And it was, I knew that there was more than a God. I felt like I knew even when I was young that there was a God and a goddess, that there were multiple gods, multiple goddesses. But after my stint in the church, I decided, okay, let's put our money where our mouth is and go and practice witchcraft completely and fully and throw ourselves into it with everything we've got. And I've been practicing honestly for 30 years or more.
Wow. But it's so funny because I grew up also very involved in my church. I wanted to be on the youth groups and I went on my own to do my first communion when I was 12 years old. Nobody took me to church. I went with my own two little feet, you know? And when I was listening to you just now about wandering in the woods, because I grew up in Mexico City. But the wandering has to do a lot with the witchcraft. Because when I was a teenager, which is unheard of, and I will get in trouble all the time, because when you're in the woods, by your land, by your family's land, you can wander for an hour and you're still close-ish home. But when you grow up in Mexico City and you wander for an hour, where are you and with whom and what are you doing? And I remember that I used to love to just get in my bike and go around back and forth the streets around my house or walk. And I will walk 2 miles one way and then 2 miles back home, and I will get in all kinds of trouble. But I was people watching and the nature that we still have in the cities, right? You listen to the birds and looking at the trees, listening to the wind. If people shopping or people getting upset with each other, the traffic, all the urban sounds of magic that also put you in some kind of trance when you're doing that kind of thing. But there's always this what I have encountered with people, whether they grew up as witches or not, that there was this heavy part of a spiritual component, a need to be connected with some kind of practice spiritually. Mm-hmm. And then you come to find out, like, this is not the right label for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the practices that I learn are really important, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So how was your, you tell us in the book about your family being very involved in a lot of practices. I want to talk about Uncle Zed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Uncle Zed. But the family in appearance is Pentecostal, right?
They're actually, the family was very Baptist, honestly.
Okay.
I was like you, though. I started going to church by myself. We really, I mean, in the South, everybody has a denomination in religion.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean you go to church every day or go to church every Sunday. You have that denomination. So my family was Baptist, but there was, like you said, that need for the spiritual. And I didn't know where to find it other than nature and the church.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like you. I went to the church by myself. That's actually how I ended up in the ministry, because I go to my pastor one weekend night and I said, I got something to talk to you about. I was going to tell him I'm gay.
Yeah.
And he's like, I know what you're going to tell me. And I'm like, oh, you do? He's like, yeah, you're called to the ministry. And I went, okay.
Oh my goodness.
So that's how I ended up in the ministry.
How? Okay, so you're there, you're in the ministry, you're doing your thing, you learn a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point, you're like, I'm done with this, and I want to be
mm-hmm.
openly man, openly gay, openly witch. Did you just bring out a big machete and cut everything, or?
No, it was a transition for me, because I was never a part of churches that were the way they are now. The churches that I was involved with were very open. They were big churches, so they had to be, I think, more open-minded than most. I think the small-mindedness you find in the small churches. But in that church, I eventually did come out as gay, worked in the ministry that way, and was still utilizing what I'd learned in the craft. So essentially, when I was ready to just break from the church, it was more of a, let's give hugs, let's say goodbyes, we'll see each other again. And I'm still in contact with some of those people.
That is one.
So it was, I never had the bad experience that a lot of witches have with churches.
Mm-hmm.
My experiences were always good. I was always accepted for who I was. I never had to pretend to be anybody.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard for people who don't understand or grew up with that amalgamation of practices that they can coexist.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, I'm a Mexican witch. I do folk magic, but I don't work with saints and the church.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't. It's just not my thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that a lot of these traditions of doing, you know, like you say, like mama, talking to the wind, but then reading a Bible verse is
mm-hmm.
not the same. And they will do it together. So do you get any, and this is just like the, you know, the little chisme question, the little gossip question. Do you get any backlash from witches who had really bad experiences with church that they look at you like, oh, come on?
No, I really haven't. I've the people that know my background, I'm completely transparent with it. I have no trouble telling you I didn't have any issue. I understand that those are that there are those that do or have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to diminish that, because that is traumatic for them. So I have to be the one to be more understanding, not necessarily them, because I haven't had their trauma. I don't understand their trauma.
Yeah.
So I have to be a little bit more empathetic when it comes to listening to their stories. But instead of sitting there and say, well, I didn't have that, I mean, well, no crap. But I have to be willing to hear what they've dealt with and listen, truly listen.
One of the pillars of my behavior in this world is that, not because you didn't live through it doesn't mean it didn't happen. It didn't happen to you, but it happened to other people. And in the same breath, the beauty of being able to amalgamate both forms of existence can happen,
Exactly.
And what people don't realize, for example, in Mexico, we have so many saints. And I don't know if other countries who practice Catholicism have all this plethora of saints, but because in Mexico, the colonizers will bring the statues, trying to build churches in different places, and the indigenous people will say the statue don't want to move anymore, and they will drop the statue in the places of worship of their gods and goddesses. So it will be this sacred land. And they got so smart, they're like, if you're gonna build a church, you're gonna build it here. And of course the colonizers will never get off the horse and try to move the statue. So they'll be like, okay, I guess the Christ wants to build a church and right on this spot. And so we have in Mexico they call him Jesus, right? So the Jesus of this and that, and the Jesus of that and the other, and the Jesus of blah blah blah. I don't even know the names because I again I move away from that, but the point was to keep the churches being built on sacred places.
Right. And it makes sense too that they would bring these statues of saints in to appease the native belief. I mean, if you look at the Catholic Church, seriously, the Mother Mary was brought in as a substitute for the goddess.
And
I mean,
what the
and I
goddess
see the
had
saints
to,
the same way.
I'm sorry, we keep cutting on each other. And what the goddesses had to do is wear these dresses and look a little different, but the essence was the same.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that sounds like a wonderful childhood and a wonderful welcome into adulthood where you don't have to hide. So how loving and how lucky, how fortunate you are that you didn't have to hide, that you didn't have to cut ties with the people that you love, as an openly gay man. But what about as an openly gay witch? Was the witchcraft welcome with your people, or was it something that it was intrinsic already?
As a witch, I mean, honestly, the people that I've got to know, it's a non-issue. But then again, I tend not to make my sexuality what my life is. I mean, my sexuality is a part of me. It's not the entirety. My sexuality may be a part of my craft, but it's not a part of all of my craft. I mean, it's just like, there may be some things that I do in my practice that may be specific to me as a gay man, but I'm going to be doing some of the same things that you may do. But it, whether I'm gay has nothing to do with it. It's just a matter of what my practice is. I mean, it's like when I sit out in the woods, I don't sit and announce to the animals, here's the little gay man again. It's more of a, I'm here to partner with you. I want let's work magic together.
Absolutely. Can you imagine the little person coming out and being like, I'm two,
Oh, let me tell you, that night that possum came up and I actually got to touch it. I was screaming bloody murder because I'm scared to death of them. But I was ecstatic at the same time. I'm horrified of a possum. They scare me.
But don't you just tattoo one on you?
Let me put it this way. My big fear is rats. Possum looks enough like a rat that their visage scares me.
I
Like if I'm walking through the woods in the dark and I see one coming, Yeah, I'm going to scream and run the other way. If I'm sitting there, I'm kind of a captive audience and they're going to do what they want.
Yeah.
But I've come to realize that it's an advocate of mine. It's an ally of mine, and I have things that I can learn from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is that working through the fear, right? Working through the fear, like you talk about it. So let's talk about the book. You wrote this book, The Simple Magic of Wild Things, The Journey of a Southern Male Witch. And I don't want to spill the whole book, obviously, but you have the beginning, right? The fried undergrowth, don't look in the pot. The Booger Woods, my wild unruly kin, breaking those old family curses, et cetera, et cetera. Again, I don't want to give out the whole book. It is a wonderful journey. But you share with us a lot about your family, a lot about your ancestors who have abilities, who have gifts, as some people call them, sight. The ability to transform things. I forgot her name right now, but the one great aunt, I think, that never married, and
Oh, that was my grandma Thula.
Grandma Thula, that's the name.
That's the wild card.
I love her. I love
Oh, I
her.
do
And she's
too.
like, I'm not gonna get married. I'm gonna have all the kids that I want.
And I'll raise them on my own.
Yeah.
That to me is where I get my spit and vinegar. I mean, she is, and I don't doubt that every bit of mischievousness, every bit of just pure, I'll do it out of spite comes from her. And that's one thing that I was taught as a child. If somebody tells you you can't do something, prove them wrong. Do it out of spite. And that's what she did. And I mean, my grandma was just like her. I mean, you saw one of the parts of the book was when her and my Aunt Janelle got into a fight in a senior citizen center over a man.
Yep. That is amazing. But what inspired you to actually put them on the book? Not just your family, but all your practice. What is the spark that put this book into you to
I think
share?
that as witches, there are voices that need to be heard. And the book may be partially my voice, but it's the voice of my ancestors as well. And these people have messages that they need to speak. My Uncle Zeb was a huge part of the book. My Uncle Zeb had the gift of sight, but he didn't know how to use it. And he didn't know how to quiet the voices when he didn't want to hear them. So the only way he knew to do that was to commit suicide by sitting on a railroad track. So his voice comes through me because my ancestors, a lot of the contact that I have with them, not only through the worship, is through dreams. And he was honestly the first ancestor that came to me in dreams. And it was like, but, and I think he knew that with the gift of sight, that's the one thing that scared me more than anything as a child. Because I can remember sitting in my bedroom and there was a picture of my great grandfather and great grandmother on the wall. And I can remember seeing those pictures. My great grandfather and grandmother would come out of those pictures at night to talk to me. And most of it was him sitting, and this was a 7 foot tall, size 14 shoe man. And he was a gentle giant. He would sit on the edge of the bed, and all I could hear was, "We're watching out for you. Just want you to know you're okay, you're safe, we're watching out for you." And Zeb came through the same way. He was like, "Just want you to know I'm your Uncle Zeb. This is what I want to help you through. I want you to understand the voices, what they are, where they're coming from, how to work with them." So I've learned a lot through working with my ancestors. And there's been a lot of familial healing through that work.
When you were little, and grandma and grandpa come out of the photo, did you ever meet him in person, or are this like many journeys? So you
This
never.
was this was this was my great grandmother and grandfather, my grandma's parents. And we lived in the house they had lived in, and where when back in those days when people died, they displayed them in the living room. So it didn't surprise me that their spirits were very active there.
And were you scared?
I was at first, and then, like I said, I knew who the picture was. So I knew that they were family, and they were always so gentle with me. But it came more, the fear of the voices came more when I was starting to get things outside of the house. Like graveyards were horrible for me as a child.
Yeah, you have
Funeral home.
a chapter talking about those experiences. I'm like,
Yeah. Funeral homes, hospitals were horrible because it was constant and I didn't know what to do with it.
just like your ankle. At one point, did you have those dreams with ankle set?
Oh my gosh. I had to have been in my 20s, maybe even early 30s, because I had blocked that out. Because in the ministry, where do you think I spent most of my time? Hospitals, funeral homes,
Oh my God, yes.
exactly, cemeteries. So it was either shut it down or learn to deal with it. So in the South, you learn, shut it down. But the thing about shutting down something like that is if you start shutting down one part of yourself, other parts of yourself follow.
Yes. And am I pronouncing the name correctly, Zed?
It's Zeb.
Zeb. So then he comes through when you're 20 or 30, and he kind of hands you the manual, right? So to speak. And what happens then? More come?
Yes. And he told me, he's like, be prepared. You're going to open floodgates. So it was just a matter of you still have to learn. Like when I first started learning to listen to the voices, you don't learn how to tell them I need sleep. So all night long, I would wake up so exhausted just because it was constant. So then he's like, okay, so I need to teach you something. You're going to have to tell them you got to sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's that easy? He's like, it's that easy.
Yeah.
And he's like, if you're doing something and don't need a voice to come in at a certain point, tell them. He's like, and I think that's where, as a group of witches, sometimes we make it harder than it should be. In order to tell somebody not to do a spirit, not to do something or do this, I don't have to run around in a circle 5 times. I don't have to chant 18 million times. I don't have to have a special kind of water or a special kind of plant. I just need to be willing to say, not right now. Trust
Exactly.
me, I'll be back to you later, but not right now. Now is not a good time.
And therein lies the reason why I feel so comfortable and so reflected on folks from the Appalachians and Southern witches in the United States, because we have that magic of simplicity on the everyday actions. And I think we are, and I don't speak for everybody who's a witch in the south of the United States, but I'm just saying, if you want to do the three steps to the right, seven to the left, special water, one to three, the color, the time, the hour, if that's your jam, please, honey, go for it. All out, right? But I think because we live our lives with a little bit less privilege than other witches, we work with what is at hand.
Exactly.
And there is some sense of immediacy to solve the problem, right? That people who do very elaborated rituals can have the luxury to do, but we don't. I don't think we do. Because we depend on the land, we depend on our work, and we depend on keeping moving, just like sharks. Stop, you sink. And And I think also the fact that we are so grounded on reality, I think that we are more in touch with setting boundaries in this in the third dimension, right? Hey, I cannot record this day. Can we record the next day? Yes, we can. Okay. Can you come early? Yes, I can. I mean, agreements, boundaries, practicality, right?
Exactly.
Whereas if you're talking to the disembodied entity, the same rules apply.
Right. They don't realize that it's midnight and I've got to work at 6 the next morning. So I need to be willing. And it's not about just saying, get out of my face and da 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 da. No, treat them the way you would people. Treat entities, spirits the way you do people. Be respectful, be courteous. I don't do any ancestral work without respect. I
Absolutely.
mean, when I come in front of them, I don't demand that my ancestors meet me at my altar. I ask. I make sure that I've got something good to give them, just like my grandma would do when I'd come visit her. My grandma would have cakes and pies all over the kitchen table. And she's like, sit down, I'll get you. I know you don't like this kind of pie, but I'll get you this piece of cake. So, I mean, I think that you're right. It comes from necessity. It also comes from, in my experience, growing up poor. I couldn't go 15 miles away and get a certain kind of well water. I could go back behind the house and get something out of the creek. I could go into the woods and get honeysuckle blossoms. So it's a matter, and I think that's the way our ancestors were too. They did with what they had. And that's why in the book, I've got a whole section of recipes for incenses and oils. Substitute. If you don't have what that calls for, use something different. Trust me, I use bacon grease as oil all the time. And I'll use it as a carrier oil to anoint my candles. That's the Southern in me.
Wow. Well, before the time, because believe it or not, we have about 10 minutes before we have to go. But so the book is filled with anecdotes, stories, the voices of your family, the voices of your ancestors, your voice, obviously. But you also gift us, you're very generous because you gift us here works of magic for each occasion, some beautiful songs that you've written that I have no idea.
And
Stay
this is the first time I've shared them. I've kept them to myself for years.
that is a wonderful gift. Thank you for sharing that. And there's a bunch of stuff to work with. Whether you want this book just as a reference for this spells and workings of magic, or you want to see where it comes from, which I think is the best part of it. This book works both as a reference and as a storyteller, which is the favorite, my favorite way to read about witchcraft. I think academia should be reserved for academics, and I'm not one of them. But with your permission, if it is okay, and if it's not, I want you to read it. But
No, I'm completely fine with you reading it.
this is part of the My Wild and Unruly Kin chapter, where he's talking to us about the ancestors. And just to give you a little bit of a teaser, listen to this beautiful invocation that David wrote. Now, me reading in front of the author, that is some audacity. All ancestors who came before us, whose wisdom and strength we hold dear, we gather here to honor and remember. Your presence always near. With gratitude, we offer a prayer for the guidance you bestow. In times of joy and times of despair, your wisdom help us grow. May your spirit watch over us as we navigate life's path. Grant us courage, love, and trust to face challenges with resolve and grace. We seek your blessing and protection for our family and all who come before. May your legacy be our inspiration, forever cherished, forevermore. In humble reverence, we bow our heads. In unity, we honor your name. May the bond between us forever fade, our gratitude forever aflame. To our ancestors, we send this prayer. With love and reverence, we convey. Your presence and guidance we hold dear. Now and for eternity, we shall always pray. I got goosebumps reading it.
That's one of my favorites. And I use it anytime I invoke my ancestors.
They're here.
And that's just it. I want the environment that they come into to be an environment of respect and love, and for them to know that they're welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of the people, there is a phrase that you say in the book, and I love it because I never heard it said this way, by anybody. Energy is energy is energy. And people don't understand. I mean, you and I are cut from a different cloth, right? It's obviously you and I are kind of obsessed with the ancestors and the Day of the Dead and the ancestor work and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that is kind of part of what makes us become such good friends. But the relationships don't end. They change. It's a modified relationship. Now you get to speak more than they do. Or they might speak more, and if you pay attention, then you'll get all this information and wisdom and wit. And sometimes they're sad, and sometimes they're happy, and sometimes they have this gold, what is it called, la pepita? The gold, you know.
Like a seed?
Yeah. The gold... dust is not dust. I'm trying to think of the when it just comes out of the river. Anyway, sometimes it's gold. Sometimes the wisdom is invaluable and it comes to you in a dream or in a secret or. And sometimes they're very cryptic and it's for you to freaking decipher it. And it's like, couldn't you just give it to me fast food style? And they're like, you had to think about it. That's part of the lesson, is to decipher it, to find the mystery.
And I found that when it comes in a riddle like that, it's to help me grow. Because 9 times out of 10, it involves some kind of a journey. It involves digging, research, study, and doing the work. And that's one thing that Thula... that came down from Thula, you got to be willing to do the work.
And doing the work is one thing that I believe that younger witches, I'm 50 now, so I say that more often now, younger people. I see a lot of younger people trying to get this immediacy on solving the problems, right? And I'll just light a candle and it will happen. And I'm like, you still need to do the work. You still need to grind. You still need to pay attention and put the time and do the invocation. And you don't need the fancy tools. I mean, if you have them, good. But it doesn't have to be immediate. It doesn't have to be on Facebook or TikTok. It doesn't have to be flashy. It has to come from your heart. And it has to
and
be.
That's just it. That's just it. Most of my workings are not flashy. Most of my workings are very simple. My place in the woods that I do my working is a burned out old tree stump. And it's there that I find more connection with spirit than I do anywhere else. And yes, I've been part of huge rituals. And I'm not saying that you don't feel spirit there. I'm just saying that I think it comes in those more intimate times. When you're allowed just to be by yourself with the Lord, the lady, the animal spirits, and I'm one of those, I'm very much animistic. I believe that everything has a spirit. So it's a matter of creating relationship And I think that's important not only in ritual, but in our community as well. I mean, think about it. Had you and I never met, we would have never, I mean, I would have never known how much I love you.
Likewise, I think we met before, and we're just rekindling. I truly believe that it's
I
like,
do too.
especially when I have visions of ancient people speaking to me, and when they turn around, I see my face, and I'm like, what the heck? Those are really scary visions, but it's like, it's your kin. You just don't. There is no familiar face for you to recognize as their kin other than your face. If they're in our DNA, they're in our shadow, they're in our collective, they're in the color of our skin, they're in the way our hair curls or not, or and they're with us all the time.
And it's just like with my mentor, she and I knew that we knew each other from other lives. And before she died, her last words to me was, "I'll see you the next time around."
I also love that you call your magic workings, because in Spanish we also say, trabajo, trabajito, hacer un trabajito. And I don't know who borrowed the word from whom. Who cares? But it's clear that there is a connection. Because a little working, un trabajito, we say it the exact same way,
But if you think about it, it's like planting a garden. There are things you have to do to make that garden produce. And you're not going to get anything if you throw the seeds in the ground, leave the water off, let it fend for itself. You might get something here and there, but you're going to get, if you take care of that garden, if you do the work, weed it, water it, feed it, you're going to get a bumper crop. Same thing with magic. One of the quotes that I love is from the movie Halloween Town, where Debbie Reynolds, as Aggie, says, "Magic is really very simple. All you have to do is want something bad enough and let yourself have it." But one of the things that she did highlight there was what she did to make it happen. So it's not just a, it's not wishcraft. It is a working. We have to put in that work to manifest what we need manifested.
Absolutely. Another thing that I see on the book that I know I practice a lot. And I love other people that I've seen practicing this, but I never knew there was a name, or I never would have put a name of it. You call it the magic of encouragement. What a beautiful thing. I think the closest concept to that is something I'm familiar with this book that came out in the 70s. It's called The Four Agreements. One of
I'm
the
familiar with that.
agreements, one of the agreements is be impeccable with your word. That's one of the laws that I live by, right? I try to be as impeccable as possible. And this magic of encouragement a little bit transported me to that place of when I first read the be impeccable with your word. For every word is a spell, he says in the book. Miguel Ruiz, for those who are not familiar. And I love that you put it in words, and I love that you dedicated a chapter to there is no competition, there is no who's out to get me, and that dispels a lot of the fear that some folk practitioners choose to ride on. Somebody did something, somebody put something on me, somebody is out to get me. Like, no. Work from love and empowerment.
I want to be your biggest cheerleader. I want to see you succeed as much as I want to see myself succeed. There's nothing that you do that is just exactly like what I do.
Nope.
I mean, we're all different. We all have different giftings. And if I'm sitting here picking yours to death, then mine aren't going to be as effective.
I tell my apprentices, Dave, You sit on the line with your bag of medicine and you wait for the sick person to come and grab the medicine from your bag. And you look to your left and there's another 7 bags. And you look to your right and there's another 25 bags. And you fear now because whoever needs your medicine are going to come to get it from you. And the people next door to you and the next one, they have a special flavor, special kind of medicine that is for the people that need that medicine. There is not this mentality of scarcity. It's colonization, it's part of the colonizer's mentality. And it's also rhetoric of scarcity, competition, power over.
The way I look at it, in the South, when a Southern person cooks, you can go to everybody's house in the South and they're going to cook a dish differently than the next person. My collard greens aren't going to taste like your collard greens. My hoe cakes aren't going to taste like your hoe cakes, but they're still good. And somebody that may not like mine is going to like yours. So it's important for me to encourage other witches so that that whole buffet is available. And I'm not going to stand there and say, you can't eat from that buffet because you're not eating my dish. I don't want to watch somebody starve to death.
Exactly.
I want to see people flourish. And if that means that they need to eat your dish instead of mine, I want to see them do that. I want them to be fat and happy after they've eaten too.
Absolutely. So, folks, The Simple Magic of Wild Things, The Journey of a Southern Male Witch by Dave Gaddy. There's a foreword on it by Jake Richards. I'm going to tell you the rest of the chapters. The Magic of Encouragement, obviously, Unleashing the Wild Within, Witchcraft and Animal Friends. I have to tell you something about that. Learning the Language of the Forest, The Green Wizard, When Wild Soul Sleeps, Reigniting the Flames of Magic, The Road Back Home, Lotions, Potions, and Recipes, and of course, the bibliography. Sometimes I think about the wild things and how some people don't realize that city people, we do have our own wild things. And so this morning, the day that we recorded this show, you know, it's pre-recorded. I'm sorry. David is busy. I'm busy. That's why we're recording. Pre-record. But this morning, as I'm doing my little walk on a parking lot by my house, you know, it's a White Sox park, is the White Sox parking lot is huge. So I do my walk on the parking lot. And I start hearing the caw. And I look up and up on the pole where a light used to be, but there's not a light fixing anymore. There's a I think it's a craw. Could be a raven. I don't know. I don't know how to distinguish them. But it was loud. And I swear to you, Dave, that it was a warning. It was a don't come too close. And on your book, you mentioned about an animal feeling very feminine energy. I felt this. It was very masculine and very territorial. And it was very much F around and you'll find out. And what I did is I just covered my head because I'm like, just in case, let me just continue walking. And once I was not on his visual periphery, he stopped. And any other person on a busy day probably wouldn't notice. But I'm walking there, no headphones, no nothing. I just want to be walking and be with my thoughts. And that got me out of my thoughts and made me pay attention to the wild things. And I've yet to decipher what the message was other than a warning. But the beauty of nature and the beauty of wild things is everywhere. I mean, if you can go to the woods, it's even better, but You can find it on your plants, grow in your garden, and your little patch of the tree in front of your house. And just look at the little ecosystem that is on the outside. For the crying out loud, the cicadas that are coming out here in Chicago, and they're going to invade the whole. I am not going anywhere. On the summer, I'm going to stay home. It was nice knowing you. Because you know, I have the biggest phobia of insects. So.
I would be surprised if you see any, though, because typically what they do is they just come out, lay their eggs, and then the birds eat them.
But there's two different species that are coming out together
How
after
fun.
17 years. It's not fun, Dave. Not fun for me. It's fun for them. I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun for them. Anywho, time is of the essence. When you're having a good time, you don't want to go. Two questions. Where can people get your book? And where are you going? Be where are you going to be on the near future events, presentations, etc.?
You can get my book at rebelsatori.com or at amazon.com. And it's listed under Dave Gaddy, Gaddy, The Simple Magic of Wild Things. And coming up, I have Mystic South coming the end of July. And I will be teaching a course there on using ancestral worship to navigate past trauma, which,
Beautiful.
trust me, I have a lot of experience doing that.
And if you want to see Dave, go to Mystic South and find your tickets and find a way to get there. He's also quite often with Aaron Marsh on Storybook and myself. And also a reminder for people, if you buy this book through Amazon or any other places where you can leave a review, leave a review, go to
Yes.
Goodreads, leave a review. That helps the authors a great deal. Give yourself the gift of this wonderful book. It really is a work of love. You can tell that there was a lot of love, and it feels very personal. Thanks for the big shout out once again. That was beautiful.
Oh, my pleasure. Definitely my pleasure.
And to everybody, just to remind you that CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, has over 1,000 hours of podcasts available for you to download, listen, to share, to keep for your own personal archives. We have Circle Talk 2 Tuesdays a month. We have Circle of Nature 1 Wednesday a month. We have Blue Marble 1 Friday a month. We have Songs of the Pagan Tribe 2 Fridays a month. We have Paganos del Mundo on Spanish and Portuguese every Saturday. And we have Lunatic Mondays 2 Mondays a month. By the way, Paganos del Mundo is going to go to 2 Saturdays a month, start of January. So stay tuned. There's just a little change. And of course, for Lunatic Mondays, we have next week, we're going to have Billie Toppetate talking about her book, Spirit Guide Invocations. And then in June, we have Wendy Mata and Brandon Weston. So another Appalachian friend will be here. So stay tuned. My name is Laura Gonzalez. All the work that we do is volunteer. So, you know, for us to have time to volunteer, we need to work. So please hire me for readings. Hire me for cleansings. Come to my classes. I'm teaching the Colonizing the Goddess series classes. We have done Cuatlicue, the Mother Goddess, Chantico, the Fire Goddess, Chilonen, the Corn Goddess, Chalchutlicue, the Fresh Water Goddess. And just yesterday, we did Mayahuel, the Agave Goddess, the Maguey Goddess. And there are more goddesses that are going to be throughout the year 2024. If you miss any of the live classes, fear not. They're available on demand, as are my tarot classes and my spell series classes that I did last year. Dave was in one or two of those classes, actually. And yeah, keep us busy so we can keep bringing you all this content. We do it as a labor of love. And speaking of love, Dave, I love you, my dear friend.
I
Thank you.
love you too.
Thank you for gifting us this wonderful book. We need more of obviously the simple magic of wild things, emphasis on simple, not as a derogatory, but as the beauty of simplicity. Thank you so much, David, for being Dave, for being here on the show today. And I leave you the microphone so you can say good night to everybody listening.
Good night, everybody. It's been a pleasure to be with you. Always, always join Laura when she's got a class or something going on. And if you go to Instagram, I'm normally sharing her information. She's sharing mine. It's just like she said, it's a labor of love. So peace be with y'all, and just learn to live life simply, but with every bit of joy you've got.
Absolutely. And since you mentioned Instagram, thank you. Weather Wise Man, the real Weather Wise Man is yours. I'm Magia Cerati. And yeah, please support us so we can continue giving you all this work. And peace be with you, he said. And I'll say, never forget that you are loved. Good night.
Good night.
Lunatic Mondays is a production of Laura Gonzalez for CSN Podcasts, building bridges of community around the world.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow nature-centered paths. Join us throughout the week for various programming connecting with the community around the world. Please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSN Podcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. Until next time, many blessings.